On the Record
on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
Going to reflect on some of the sporting highlights of the year. Joined in studio by Mick McCarthy, former producer of Off the Ball and then more recently editor of balls.ie. Mick, we've decided to do three moments each that jump out for us of real standout memories of the year, which is actually very difficult to do because there's been so many when you take in every different code. We're going to let you go have the first dibs in them. One of your three major sporting highlights of the year.
Okay. So the first one I went for, Gavin, was Kelly Harrington winning gold at the Olympics. Few things about that.
Okay.
Right. So first of all, it was 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning. There's something amazing about that sticks in the memory when you get up for a big sporting occasion like that at a kind of a 6 o'clock in the morning time.
Yeah.
It's your whole weekend, your whole day is it gravitates
kind of
around it.
Yeah.
So you kind of, so that there, then there was that. There's the fact that everybody, I think, on the planet, if they knew her, would love Kelly Harrington and would wish her well, and she's that kind of character. There's all the post news story of the week after that was
Portland Row and
you know, that particular part of Dublin, which was lovely. And then for me, one of the things that hits it is, like, Ireland don't have too many gold medals. We'd won one a few days before.
I want to come back to that in a minute, because I actually think that somehow a little bit of what they achieved was overlooked because of how much national happiness there was about Kelly Harrington.
And you're going to be preaching to the choir on that one, get me going. But yeah, no, absolutely. But we'd won a gold medal a few days before. And what was amazing about both of them, and the reason I picked Kelly was because it was a culmination of the two things, was both of them were the two, so Paula Dunham and Fintan McCarthy, followed by Kelly Harrington, clearly the best in their fields, clearly the gold medal favourites, not just people who've come from somewhere to go and win a gold medal at the Olympics, but go out, lead from the front and go and do it. And what was unbelievable about Kelly Harrington's fight, and if you watch it back, what you'll sense is just almost this sense of Hugh Cattle on commentary for RTE, you know, trying not to be too calm about this, because it was clear she had it in the bag. You know, she was so much the better fighter, and she went out and even Katie Taylor, even the great Katie Taylor, everything she did, everything that came after her was because of her.
Our memories of the Olympic final are that it was right in
so
the balance.
Scary.
Right,
so scary the whole way through. You didn't know she'd won it until we knew she won it.
The one thing that I remember actually about Hugh Cattle's commentary is that when the announcer in the stadium says by unanimous decision, he already says, she's got it. And the rest of us are like, hang on, wait, does she? Do we know for certain? Like, there's no way she could be overtaken. We hadn't processed exactly like the arithmetic of how it's all going to work. Not to dismiss Kelly Harrington at all, and we all loved all the scenes in Portland Row, and my favourite memory was one of the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals, I think, that afternoon, and somebody dropping by a sack of spuds to her house and her father being delighted. It's just the most
normal
thing
in the world.
But that there was this kind of national indulgence in it, more than there was for the two rowers only the previous week. And I don't know whether that's because we didn't have the 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, so it wasn't that kind of national moment, or was it because maybe that the O'Donovans had already had their moment in the sun in Rio 5 years previously, so that there wasn't the same novelty about how good sods they were?
Yeah, possibly, you know. And I do think that when you had Paul and Gary, they took over the Olympics in 2016 and they were the stars of it. And, you know, like, I was working obviously online at the time, and that was like, you know, there was nothing bigger than the O'Donovans for 6 months, you know. And I think people understood what they were. And Paul is actually, like, he's still relaxed and he's still a casual interview, but he's also the best rower in the world, and he's serious about his training, and he's still relaxed at the interviews, but he's possibly not as funny, and it's possibly not as much of a novelty. But then it's because they had that, I don't know what you'd call it, they had this sort of infamy to live up to in the way that in that they were such good interviews, that people forgot about the fact that, hold on, we have got in Paul O'Donovan the best rower in the world, pound for pound. He's going out as favourite to win. They didn't piss it, but it wasn't too far away from it. Do you know what I mean? They won easily in the final of the Olympics. And look, Fintan McCarthy deserves all the credit in the world as well, but I just, you know, it was just, that was an incredible occasion as well. And honestly, I'm sitting there, that was one that I didn't get up to go downstairs for. I watched on the iPad in bed, but was like trying to silently celebrate as it was happening. But I agree with you. I just feel like, and look, the Sports Personality Award, RT Awards, that's got
to... I didn't want to kick the hornet's nest on that one, but I know you're exercising.
That's not, but I mean, I think it's fair to say that somebody in a team should be, like, if they're an outstanding individual, as Paula Donovan is, and has won everything there is to win, he should be nominated on his own. And as, look, fair play to Rachel Blackmore, 5 or 6 of them could have won it, but but how is he not in the conversation? And we've collectively forgotten about that. But I suppose my picking of Kelly Harrington was the culmination of the week, added to the character that she is and added to all the... Yeah. The reaction that we did have was great in itself, even if it did undermine the Rowan.
I think you're definitely right about the Sunday morning factor as well, because I think there's something different about seeing something at 2 or 3 in the morning, but when you're getting up early for it, it's almost like how, if you go back far enough, your memories of Ireland playing Cameroon on a Saturday morning in the 2002 World Cup are far better than them playing Saudi Arabia, because it's a morning and everyone's getting up early to watch it. My standout moment for the year, and this is where I almost break out my original accent, because most people don't know when they hear this sort of polished off by UCD for a few years accent, they don't really know that I'm originally from Meath, hey, so they don't. And then you hear me shouting at the various exploits of Andy McEntee, or in this case Eamon Murray, as the Meath ladies team, who weren't even playing Division 1 football in springtime and weren't even playing senior championship football last summer, come from absolutely nowhere to win, and conclusively win, and comprehensively on merit deserve to win the All-Ireland Senior Ladies Football Championship. And I still don't know, and it's amazing that not more is said about whatever secret sauce Eamon Murray managed to find, that he managed to turn a team which had been competitive but not really a standout performer team in intermediate, who, like I said, were only playing Division 2 football and won that, managed to convert them into a side that could stand pound for pound with any of the other teams that were there, had a real nail-biter but very conclusive win over Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final, came up against Dublin, who were trying to complete their own incredible sequence of All-Ireland wins as well, and stood toe for toe and didn't just kind of hang in there and pull off a sucker punch, but actually conclusively stood there and were every inch the better team on the day. And I think, just as somebody described it, and I promise I'm not just coming up with my own analysis here, somebody said that it might just be the greatest shock, but maybe the most refreshing thing that had happened in Gaelic games, maybe ever. And I don't know whether there's many other things that could compete with it.
No, it's hugely refreshing. It's funny, you say that and I immediately think of something like Clare in 95 with my own bias. I think of Offaly in 82. I think of some of the Offaly hurling teams. They'd all been there.
Some heritage there that they're leaning on. Yeah.
The heritage, and also the teams had been coming. You know, and you could argue this Meath team had been coming, but nobody saw past Dublin. And that was the thing. So Dublin had this horrendous final against Galway last year, and, you know, in the empty Croke Park. And like, it was hard to watch. But at the same time, they were just so far and away above everybody else. And you're thinking, they're at the stage where the men's team were a couple of years ago. We'll talk about the men's team in a minute. But you didn't think there was any stopping in this in the ladies' team. But I remember, like, you know, you hear rumours about a team like Meath coming through before. I watched the Cork game and the Dublin game. I hadn't really seen them before that. And, you know, Tommy Rooney from Off the Ball, you know, he's another Meath man, and he's like tweeting about how good this team are. And I'm like, I know you think they're good, but they were intermediate like a couple of years ago. They can't go from that level to that level. I'm sure they'll give somebody a game. And then I watched them against Cork, and they could have lost that game, but that's a good Cork team. It's not the Cork team of 10 years ago, but it's a good team.
Well, they bottled the Meath spirit of the old team that used to wear those sort of crisscross jerseys with the keypack on the front, that they never know they're beaten, and the comeback to level it and bring it to extra time in the semi-final against Cork.
And I thought they were better. You know, I thought they would have been really disappointed with themselves having left it behind, but it would have been the normal flow of events to happen to an up-and-coming team, you know? And obviously them, they just steamrolled Dublin in the final. I thought they were brilliant, you know? I just thought they were so exciting, and it was such a good thing for the game as well, because I feel like that team made people fall in love with them. And Gavin, I hate to say this, but that doesn't usually happen to me.
No, fully hands up. I know we generally don't tend to be the neutrals' favourites, but that for me was a standout memory.
And there's one more thing really, really briefly on that, right? Vicky Wall was nominated, and she's brilliant, and look, it was great seeing her just like run through Dublin and stuff in the final. But they've got a superstar player, like a real superstar, in Emma Duggan, full forward there, 18 years old. She's been playing with this team since she's 16. She was outstanding in both matches. She got a goal after a couple of minutes in the final, and you know,
got her CAO points a couple of days afterwards.
Exactly,
as well,
I know. Yeah, it's not
unbelievable. She was this year.
But that's the key as well, is that they have somebody to hang it on, that you're like, you know, this could be the new Coruscant. It's too early to say that. If you're listening, Emma, I'm only just speculating. But, you know, that's what it is, though. You know, you have somebody that can say, we have a couple of stars on this team that we can build on, you know.
You mentioned the Dublin ladies team and how they were gunning for their 5 in a row. Of course, this was the summer when the Dublin men's team could have been looking for their 7 in a row. And that's one of your memories, is how that didn't come to pass.
7 in a row, when you say it. Yeah, so it's the tension of it, that game. Like, so the All-Ireland semi-final between Mayo and Dublin, that would be my standout Gaelic football moment, my GAA moment really of the year, and one of my three that I've picked here. Because, you know, the fact that it was Mayo, the fact that Mayo had been through all of this, like Mayo's record, I've been going through it all year, like about how they've been in 6 finals in 10 years, they've been in 8 semi-finals. you know, I think they've lost 9 semi-finals and they lost in a replay in 2 of those. Yeah. You know, like they're and yet they haven't done it. And it's another sob story that they didn't lose to Tyrone. But isn't it amazing that they will still have that moment where they topple the team that, if not for them, they would have 2 or 3 All-Irelands. And that was incredible in itself. It was incredible that it was Mayo. But it was also amazing to watch this. All the evidence was there that Dublin weren't the team of yesteryear. Cluxton was gone, so on and so forth. And they weren't playing well. But you just assumed they were going to do it. It's like the All Blacks.
They've forgotten how to lose.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the All Blacks at the World Cup. You know, you just didn't think it was going to happen, even though you were watching.
Yeah.
Clearly, they aren't as good as they were. So that, for me, I think if you just take it, the fact that, by the way, that game was over at half time as well. Let's not forget that. Dublin had them beaten in our heads.
Yeah.
I think
it was easily forgotten. Actually,
was it like 10-4 or something like that? It was I could have the scores completely arseways, but the game was in my head over.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go again. Not even worth watching.
Yeah.
And the turnaround. So just, there was 4 or 5 things together that just made that an incredible hour of our lives.
I do always remember, was it Padraig O'Hara who was doing one of the post-match interviews, and he just looks up at the Hogan stand and he just goes, look at what it means to us.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of you that's going, lads, it's great, you haven't won it yet. And of course the final didn't go their way either. But just for them to be able to celebrate that moment, because they've had so many times of heartbreak. And of course this was also the summer in which Mayo did get to lift football silverware in Croke Park, because the Connacht final was played there, so at least they have some experience. So it's a little bit,
I'm sure they're thinking about that now.
This is recency bias. One of mine is the general conclusion of the Formula 1 season anyway, and this incredible duel between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. But the way that the last couple of laps just panned out, and the way that you just could not have scripted, like Hollywood could not have summarised a more grandstand finale than there was for the last season. And Formula 1, I think, is one of those sports that has suffered a little bit, because when it used to be on terrestrial telly, everyone used to watch it, and even if you weren't very emotionally invested in Mika Hakkinen, or if you weren't too wild about the Schumacher versus Damon Hill rivalry, or Jacques Villeneuve showing up and being new and no one really knowing him, that you still had it on free-to-air television. And after it moved off, that maybe doesn't have the same kind of societal reach, where it just doesn't mean as much to as many people. But the way in which that whole season turned out, and the way in which the season was literally decided in the last lap of the last race, you couldn't script it. And this might be a case of how, yes, being lost on free-to-air is a bad thing, but also having a Netflix documentary that kind of showcases your whole thing is a pretty good thing. But like, what incredible advertising for it. And I'd say that Netflix were only just delighted at how it all wrapped up, because that is another season of Drive to Survive very nicely advertised.
Yeah, I think it sums it up. We were in here on that Sunday morning, and you know, there was there was a lot going on in the world that week, Gavin, and we spent nearly all of the pre-show time speaking about what was going to happen in Formula 1, or what had happened in the past.
At the end of it, we were like, we better talk about Omicron at some stage.
I didn't get home in time, and immediately text you when I had just heard, was I was sitting in my car outside my house, and I think I just probably just sent you exclamation marks. And it was like, what happened was just, it couldn't be. The more further I get away from it without going into it now, the more unfair I think it was on Lewis Hamilton, and quite outrageous actually. But you know, that's life, and that's the price we pay. Yes. Sporting integrity is the price we pay for sporting excitement, I think.
Yeah, your last moment, because there was a couple of things that you wanted to mention that you've decided against reflecting on, so you might talk us through the contenders first.
Yeah, so if we were picking best moment or favourite moment of the year, I'd probably be a toss-up here between Ireland beating the All Blacks again for the third time, and a few things, and that would be that, like, you know, it's a turnaround in the fortunes of Ireland since basically the World Cup a couple of years ago, and it's like back to their best, and they were outstanding. It's also the fact that, like, you know, you felt that they were just a much better team on the day, which I don't know
it's
could say
Kenny
in
Harrington
the other
factor again. Very, you watch it and you know that they're competitive. You're not waiting for them to sort of fall
collapse.
Apart. You don't know where it's going to be. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So there was that, and then there was also Rachel Blackmore, in particular the Grand National, because we'd all had the Cheltenham experience, and you know, and we'd sort of seen, Jesus, this woman is just on fire. And then for her to go and win the Grand National, and for her basically to win all of the big national races this year, just absolutely phenomenal. However, we're not picking best moment, we're just picking moment, and I can't get past, when I was thinking about this yesterday, all I could think of was those Egypt's pre-game in Euro 2020 final at Wembley, and then what was genuinely like, I spent the first hour of that game, England and Italy, a little bit worried, and I don't think
about our generation, like a crowd event.
Yes,
yeah.
I just thought something really bad was going to happen. It seemed like it was. People were in the aisles. It wasn't. It didn't seem like a safe environment, and it didn't seem like an environment where people could, where they were going to be able to wrestle control back.
Yeah.
And if something happened, it was going to go seriously wrong. And you know, people our age, not to be guessing people's ages but we don't have. We're a similar age, and we don't have memories of Hillsborough and Heysel and all of these things. I vaguely remember the day of Hillsborough, but I wouldn't have had a bloody clue what was going on.
Yeah.
And all of that stuff is kind of gone now. And I was watching this, like, the biggest game in world football this year, probably the biggest thing in world sport, really, if you think about it. And it's this amazing final where England are at home, they're at Wembley. What an occasion.
Yeah.
And I spent, you know, basically the whole game just on the edge of my seat, worried about what was going to happen. And I think that as a moment, and, you know, there was something earlier in that tournament as well, which was horrifying in its own way.
That was Christian Eriksen's health episode. Yeah. And I think what actually stuck out for me for that was that, isn't it remarkable that you'd have a tournament and something like that, something so awful to happen to Christian Eriksen on such a stage. But for it also, the circumstances for it to happen when he's in his home country's home stadium, that it's a Euros match, but because of the format of the Euros this year, that it was in the park and in a full house full of Denmark fans, being televised on this impressive, astronomical global scale. And for suddenly everyone to be like, God, I hope that guy's really okay. And actually what stood out for me was the responses of Simon Kjær and Kasper Schmeichel, who were immediately like, kind of were able to almost totally compartmentalize the fact that this was supposed to be a really important football match, but actually something more important is happening right now. And, you know, the way that they all linked around to stop any TV cameras from being able to see him as he was treated, that for me just stands out as a real team moment as well. You didn't talk about the All-Ireland Hurling Championship. Is that your Clare bias?
No, it absolutely isn't. I love that Limerick team. I really do. And there was a part of me that I wanted to talk about just because how insanely one-sided the final was and how perfect the performance it was. And there is something in that, maybe in a lesser year, but at the same time, there was just a distinct lack of drama to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Is that where brilliance becomes mundane? Because it actually, there was literally no jeopardy about where the result was going to go from so early on.
I think it probably is. It makes it a less memorable final. And it makes, you know what, you can appreciate the performance, but after 20 minutes of appreciating the performance, you might start to think about other things in your life where you're not going to do that if it's level pegging with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, well, the fact that the in my head, the only thing that was up in the air was, would they score more than anyone else has ever scored in a final or whatever.
And there's a sadist in me who wants that to happen usually when it does.
Because you
want
to witness history, don't you?
Yeah.
My final moment, this is a total curveball, and people will not necessarily remember the name of Morhad Amdouni. But Morhad Amdouni was a competitor in the men's Olympics in the marathon. And I love watching Olympic marathons because often you don't get a chance to sit down and watch something like the London Marathon. The Dublin one isn't televised, but the great city marathons you don't tend to see. But I always actually like trying to make time to watch Olympic marathons because you get to see the city presented in the most picture postcard way. And there's also just the gruelingness of like, how can someone hang in there for that long and how is it done? And I just find it to be really, really impressive stuff. Morhad Amdouni had the greatest moment in the history of Olympic marathons because at one point during the water bottles, and remember the races were run very early in the day. They were starting at 5 or 6 in the morning because of the humidity in Tokyo. In the middle of one of the races, when they're running along and all the water bottles are lined up beside them, Morhad Amdouni puts his hand out, knocks every single water bottle off the table and grabs the very last one for himself, leaving all the people trailing behind him waterless for that leg of the journey.
Unbelievable.
Which is a level of blankhousery that only Sergio Ramos could possibly ever compete with. And I just remember being really, really impressed.
Of course, his coordination was completely gone.
Oh,
you know,
I was running so fast, my hands were slippy, I just couldn't grab it. There is no way in hell. You were able to do it every other time.
It's an amazing moment to pick after one of the greatest sporting years, or more, at least busiest sporting years that I could ever remember. But if you're going to pick, you turn my negative into a positive in the reaction of Simon Kjær and Eriksen. I'm just going to take a weird thing that happened in the Olympics and switch a negative to a positive, and that is the two high jumpers sharing the gold medal.
Yes.
You know, and that was just, I still wonder if they should have went on. You know, it's like, you know, but at the same time, that was a sports moment that was just beautiful.
The joy of the Italian and the Bahraini just decided, you know what?
Like, what a year for Italy.
We can't be split. We're pals. Yeah, between the Eurovision and the 100 metres and the high jump, they've had a great old year.
The Euros.
Euros doesn't count. Mick McCarthy, thank you very much.
On the record. On News Talk. Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.